So the Dhamma for today is the Kathavattu, the topics for conversation. So speech is an aspect of our lives that has importance in the Buddha's teaching in the context of our practice and understanding of reality. Speech can be a source of great suffering. If we engage in wrong speech, speech accompanied with defilement, it can cause stress and suffering for others. Lying, harsh speech, gossiping, we can cause harm to ourselves through guilt, through remorse, through the stress and the distraction that comes from the cultivation of defilement, which can be quite easily accomplished through speech. Speech is a very easy thing to fall into without mindfulness. Being mindful while you speak is a challenge. So speech can be a really a great negative influence on our lives and on our practice more particularly. So of course, speech is also an important positive influence in our practice. Without hearing the Dhamma, without speech, we wouldn't have the ability to learn, to gain from the teachings, and it's an important avenue of wholesome karma. When we say the right things, when we engage in right speech, speech that is helpful, speech that is timely, speech that encourages others in a positive direction. So with such great importance, it's important to understand the difference between what we should be talking about and what we shouldn't be talking about. Now, to be clear, for meditators, we do not encourage conversation. As we tell all new meditators, you are to try your best to speak as little as possible. So the topics of conversation, there's 10 of them. First and foremost should be understood as a reason to be careful about your speech, and a good explanation of why we should minimize our speech. Speak only when totally, absolutely necessary, because of how easy it is and how many topics of conversation are unsuitable, especially for someone engaged in intensive practice. Of course, for Buddhists not engaged in intensive practice, there'll be much more opportunity for a conversation in a positive way, and so learning these things is valuable in general as a Buddhist. But another benefit, even for those not engaging in significant amounts of speech, is to understand the topics that comprise the general understanding of the Buddha's teaching. When you understand what are the Kathavattu, you understand what are the topics that comprise Buddhism. This is another way of understanding in general. What are the topics that interest Buddhism, that facilitate Buddhist practice? And so, because of the relationship between conversation and thought, this also relates to how we direct our minds in general. Our mind should be directed in these 10 ways, these things that we talk about. We can talk about with our teacher, but also even not talking about them, understanding that they are what's talked about, also means they are what's focused on. So they're a valuable teaching no matter where you are in your practice. That's something that is an important part of the Buddha's teaching, something to be understood, to be remembered, to be cherished, to be put into practice. So what are the 10 Kathavattu? The first is apicca katha, speech about fewness of wishes, or having few desires or little desire. Obviously, desire is the core of the problem in Buddhism. Desire is understood to be the source, the root of suffering. Because of desire, we create. Because we want things, we need things, we create, we become, we take on burdens, and we suffer as a result. We suffer when we don't get what we want. We suffer through seeking out what we want, striving for it. We suffer because we're not satisfied. Because we suffer because it pollutes our minds. and it creates addiction, it doesn't create satisfaction. The more we want, the more we get what we want. So, and so this is a very core of his teaching of the Buddha. Apiccha is an interesting term because it doesn't say talking about eradicating desires. Speech about having little desire is an acknowledgement that our practice isn't about having no desires. Having no desires is something like the goal, the ultimate end point of the Buddha's teaching. Once you've reached that point, there's no more need to practice. So for those practicing, it's not reasonable or impossible to be completely free from suffering. And so talking about having fewness of wishes means reducing them, lowering them, and having them in a reasonable range that you can deal with, that you can approach, that you can face. Obviously, there are some types of desire that are going to make it impossible to practice. Desires related to theft or manipulating others. Desires related to having a luxurious or opulent lifestyle. Wanting things that are not reasonable to want. Of course, in an ultimate sense, no desire is reasonable. But for practical purposes, we acknowledge that a meditator, even someone engaged in intensive practice, may have craving for food. This is something that is incredibly difficult to completely eradicate. May have attraction to pleasant sounds or smells or tastes or sights, pleasant feelings. And all of these are to be objects of mindfulness, and they're to be carefully observed in order to cultivate a freedom from desire. But the problem, apiccha means paying very close attention to extravagancy, being careful not to need too much or want too much, not to get distracted away from your practice, to acknowledge that we do have craving and desire, wanting this and wanting that. But to the extent that we can be mindful of it and pay attention, it's not going to be a block to an obstacle to our practice. It can instead become an object for learning, an object for growth. But we have to be careful that we don't start craving or needing extravagancies. Some meditators will go so far as to leave the monastery to go to a store to buy things that they want. Maybe they want different kinds of food or amenities or that sort of thing. So things that they don't need, but looking for extravagancy. Obviously, over the long term in our practice as Buddhists, we should try to live simply. And so this kind of conversation is valuable. It's valuable to help us regulate our greed and to acknowledge that we have greed and to keep it in manageable range so that it doesn't get out of control and become something that we can no longer face and no longer learn from, no longer become mindful of, and no longer overcome. If it gets out of control, it's like a fire that doesn't pay attention to where it goes. Fire doesn't stay in one spot or in one material. It goes and from one to the other. And so apiccha is a practical teaching, an acknowledgement that we can't completely be free as we practice, but that in order to find complete freedom, we have to be careful and not let our greed get out of control while we face it, while we learn about it and understand and overcome it. The second is santuti katha, a conversation or talk about contentment. So this is this is a complement to the first one. Apiccha relates to reducing our desires. Santuti means reducing our aversions, our irritations. So of course, having few desires means being more content. But content directly relates to our discontent. Being content is about overcoming the discontent, the dislike, the irritation, boredom with practice, irritation with our surroundings, with our environment, with our accommodations, and so on. Santuti is an important aspect of the Buddha's teaching. We've learned about this before, and particularly it's a good thing to talk about. If you're going to say things, talking about fewness of wishes, talking about contentment are very valuable and beneficial, profitable topics of conversation. Reminding each other, reminding yourself, asking questions about these things, how should I behave, or how should I work towards contentment? Asking yourself even where you are discontent, reminding yourself, reminding others, talking about these things is a valuable support for our practice to keep the anger and greed from getting out of control. A person who is discontent is a prime target for being unable to continue in their practice. The people who leave a meditation center because they're discontent with this or that, often fairly superficial aspects of their stay. It can be food, it can be lodging, it can be environment. Some people are even disturbed by the wildlife, this sort of thing. So being content and being able to be at peace with adversity, with difficulty, no matter what you experience, is a valuable part of the teaching, and something that we try to discuss and try to pass on to our students and to meditators who come to practice. The third topic of conversation is paviveka katha, means seclusion. Talk about seclusion. Seclusion is a difficult thing to practice, let alone appreciate. Difficult to practice, it's difficult to find the opportunity to be secluded. But even when we find the opportunity, it's quite difficult to enjoy, to appreciate, to benefit from the seclusion. Sometimes seclusion can be a means of performing great evil in private, in secret. But to talk about seclusion is an integral part of our support network for practicing mindfulness. Obviously, if you're engaged in society, it's a very difficult thing to stay mindful. Seclusion means focusing your attention only on your own reality, only on your own experience, to be free from the distraction of externalities. And so in order to practice mindfulness, obviously this is an integral part of what allows us to be engaged in the practice of mindfulness. If we're constantly bombarded by external stimuli, external interactions, it's very difficult. It's a reason, again, for not engaging in too much conversation. But conversation about seclusion is therefore a very valuable sort of conversation, the conversation that reminds us that, hey, we shouldn't be chatting, we shouldn't be engaged in excessive conversation. Talking about seclusion is a means of keeping, protecting yourself and protecting each other from the dangers of distraction and the dangers of over-interaction with others. There's two kinds of seclusion, of course. There's the seclusion of body and the seclusion of mind. The seclusion of mind means the seclusion from the hindrances, and so this is obviously an important aspect of the practice. But here I think it's more practically talking about seclusion of body, which means to find an empty place, a quiet place, a place where you can devote your attention to your own qualities of mind, to your own experiences of physical and mental reality, on an ultimate level, to give up the distraction of concepts, ideas, the world, people, places, things, and to be focused on experiences of seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and feeling and thinking, ultimate reality. The fourth is a complement to paviveka, is asangsagagata, which means talk about non-socializing, talk about avoiding or giving up socializing. So it's sort of the same topic, but it has two aspects. One aspect is, hey, the cultivation of seclusion is being a very valuable thing. But the other is that socializing is something that should be carefully avoided, except where absolutely necessary. So there are instances where we have to come together, when we have meetings, when we have the reporting with the meditators, when we have chanting and we come together. And so the importance of breaking away from the need or the craving to socialize, to interact, to chat, to engage in long drawn out conversations. I mean, it's an important aspect of right speech, and again it ties very directly into this this topic of what is proper to speak and why it is important to minimize our speech for the benefit of our focus and to keep us focused on what is truly real, on ultimate realities of experience. Because when in socializing, you're inevitably focused more on concepts, as you have to communicate the concepts to others, as you receive the concepts communicated by others to you. This quality of socializing, of conversation, is not in and of itself wrong or evil, it's just dangerous, because any sort of defilement that exists in the mind is quick to pick up on things we like, things we dislike. It's very difficult to see through the craving and clinging and the desire and the aversion and the delusion. It's very easy to get caught up in liking and disliking, arrogance, conceit. All of these things can easily come up when we're engaged in conversation. Of course, for someone who's free from any greed, anger, or delusion, there's no problem with socializing. But in order to facilitate our practice and our development as Buddhists, it's absolutely essential. And so talking about talking about not talking, basically, or not talking too much, not engaging in idle conversation or socializing, is a great way to support and facilitate proper practice. The fifth Kathavattu topic of conversation is Viryaramba, meaning a dedication or firmness of effort, Virya. Effort is another integral part of the Buddha's teaching, and particularly in regards to conversation, it's a way of encouraging each other to put out effort, talking about right effort. Right effort, of course, being the four samapatthana. Talking about putting out effort to eradicate arisen defilements, to protect against defilements from arising, and to putting out effort to cultivate good qualities, putting out effort to maintain good qualities that have already arisen. These are the four samapatthana, the four right efforts or right exertions. Ultimately, it means putting out effort to be mindful, because the practice of mindfulness accomplishes right effort in all its aspects. When you're mindful, you're guarding against evil and eradicating evil constantly, every moment of mindfulness. When you apply it, this is a right effort. This is putting out your effort in the right direction. So, for example, when doing walking meditation and you apply your mind to the practice again and again, constantly bringing the mind back to the foot, constantly putting out the effort to face the experiences, not just let the mind wander and get distracted, to do your best whenever you can to note your experiences. It doesn't mean exerting yourself, stressing yourself, pushing yourself harder and harder. It means being vigilant and being methodical, being dedicated, not giving up, not falling back. And so talk about this sort of thing is a valuable sort of conversation, where you encourage others in the practice, where you remind them of the value of effort, how it's not just about putting in the hours or putting in the days or spending time in a monastery or meditation center, about listening passively to the Dhamma, listening to talk after talk. It's about putting out the effort to actually practice. Viriyena dukkha majjeti, the Buddha said. Suffering is overcome through effort. This effort is the way to overcome suffering. And again, doesn't mean stressing or pushing yourself really hard, it just means doing the work, not being lazy, not being complacent, not giving up. Those are the first five Kathavattu. The second five are actually the Sara Dhamma, the five things of intrinsic value or intrinsic purpose. Sara means value or things which are essential. So those are the five essential Dhammas. And these are in order: Sila Katha, talk about Sila or ethics, Absolutely, of course, this should be no surprise. This is something that we talk about often already. But interesting, as an object of conversation, it's something that can have a outsized importance, meaning simple explanation of ethical rules can change a person's life. Obviously, for some people, breaking precepts is not an issue. Even though they may have never heard of the five precepts, they're disinclined to kill or steal or cheat or lie or take drugs and alcohol. But so many people do it simply as a matter of course, based on the culture that they were raised in, and simply because they don't have the wisdom, they don't have the perfections to prevent them from engaging. And all it would take is a reasonable explanation by someone who they trusted, someone who they respected. Which of course we never get outside of a Buddhist context. But even just learning about the five precepts can be an incredible, incredible support for a person's mental fortitude, mental purity, mental development. And conversely, if someone doesn't receive even just simple instruction or mentioning of ethical precepts, of the five precepts or the eight precepts, it's very easy for an ordinary, average person to fall into great evil through gradually engaging in greater and greater evil, killing, stealing, cheating, lying, taking drugs and alcohol. These things, of course, snowball, and they feed on themselves, on each other, and can eventually corrupt and pollute a person's mind to make them perform greater and greater evil, and make it quite difficult, if not impossible, for them to ever hope to develop themselves. And so just learning the very basics of sila is something that you see is so lacking in this world, as such an outsized, meaning it has much greater importance than what it actually means. Just by learning these very simple concepts can have a profound impact on the trajectory of one's life, because of course it's the foundation. And with sila, with proper ethics, you have a very great potential and opportunity to cultivate all of the other good things of the Buddha's teaching. And without it, the door is basically just closed until you change your ways. So talking about sila can be great among Buddhists, and it can be one of the first things to talk about for those who are not Buddhists. Talk about with those who are not Buddhist. The second, of course, samadhi, katha, conversation about concentration, conversation or talk about concentration or focus. Samadhi is a catch-all term that relates to meditation practice, the cultivation of mental focus and purity. It's the mental development. It's the main core of the Buddhist teaching is samadhi. So it doesn't just mean focusing or concentrating the mind. It means developing the mind in a positive way, in a way that creates clarity, creates strength, creates the ability to face things and see things, face experiences as they are, see them as they are, and free yourself from the control they have over you. This is obviously the great bulk of what we talk about as Buddhists. After being reassured that we are well established in ethics, we then begin to cultivate mental development. And so we can talk about how mindfulness works. The practice of mindfulness is the direct cultivation of momentary concentration, concentration that is focused on experience. When we see something and we say to ourselves, seeing, just this activity of saying seeing is the cultivation of focus. It focuses your mind on the experience as seeing, whereas normally our experience of seeing is caught up with what we're seeing, what we think about what we're seeing means, how we feel about the thinking, and what we're going to do about the seeing, and what we're going to do about the seeing, and so on, and hearing and smelling and tasting and feeling. Normally, we're not focused. We're not focused on seeing as seeing, hearing as hearing, feeling as feeling, thinking as thinking. The cultivation of mindfulness is a very different sort of activity than ordinary interactions with experience, even though it sounds very simple. This activity of reminding ourselves, this is seeing, this is hearing, this is pain, this is thought, this is liking, this is disliking, and so on. This is the core aspect of our practice. Obviously, what we're most intensively engaged in here in the practice, here in our meditation center. And of course, because it leads to the number 8, which is Panyakatha, talk about wisdom. So, talk about wisdom is, of course, an important part of the Buddhist teaching, but it's a sort of double-edged sword. Without knowing about wisdom, you can't have a sense of why we're practicing mindfulness in the first place, why we're cultivating samadhi, why we're trying to focus the mind. You won't know what to look for, but on the other hand, it's easy to mistake intellectual understanding of wisdom, which you get through conversation, for actual wisdom. And it will often be a surprise when you actually encounter true wisdom. It will even look nothing like what you thought when you conceived of things like impermanence. So impermanence is a topic, a valuable topic of conversation, but it's easy to miss actual experience of impermanence, no matter how much you talk about it, no matter how much you understand it intellectually. Until you experience it for yourself, you're never going to truly appreciate the nature of impermanence, because it's on a very different level. So wisdom is something we have to be careful about, something we should talk about. Mostly we should talk about how it relates to practice, pointing out, helping to point out to students what is impermanence, what is suffering, based on what they experience. When they experience something, to remind them, this is an example of impermanence, this is an example of suffering, this is an example of non-self, and just to acknowledge that these are integral aspects of the practice. Of course, we can talk about the deeper, or sorry, the more detailed exposition of the 16 stages of knowledge that relate to vipassana practice, but in general, understanding wisdom means to understand that nothing is worth clinging to. And that the Buddha said, this is enough. If you just tell that to people, maybe explain it a little bit, what do we mean, how is it possible that nothing is worth clinging to, give some examples, give some supportive explanations. But there's not really a lot to talk about with wisdom. It's something that we should talk about, we should have a clear understanding. We should understand that wisdom isn't something esoteric, something cultural, something particular, something related to views. It's just understanding reality as it is, seeing it clearly. Wisdom is really when you know seeing is seeing, that's wisdom. When you know hearing is hearing, that's wisdom. When you see the hearing, the seeing and the hearing arise and cease, simple things, something that you think you already knew, when you see it again and again and again, this wisdom is the path. It's that which leads to, well, the last two, which are true freedom from suffering. So number 9 is called vimuttikatha, speech about or talk about freedom. So obviously freedom is the goal in Buddhism, and this is what comes from the cultivation of wisdom. Through wisdom, through seeing that nothing is worth clinging to, you stop clinging. It's very simple, very natural, very reasonable. And that is what it means to be free. You're free from clinging, not free to. Freedom doesn't mean freedom to do whatever you want. Of course, we already have that freedom to some extent. We can attempt to do whatever we want. We may not be successful. But freedom in Buddhism is nothing like that. Freedom is freedom from the consequences of doing all the terrible things that we want to do, all the terrible ideas that we have, all the terrible ambitions, desires, attachments, all the greed and anger and delusion. Freedom from all of that, that drives us to hurt ourselves, to hurt others, to complicate our lives unnecessarily, to lead us on and on to greater and more becoming, to infinite rounds of birth, old age, sickness and death, ad infinitum, ad nauseam. Freedom means freedom from all that. And with the freedom from craving, the freedom from clinging, comes the freedom from suffering. So in Buddhism, freedom means freedom from suffering. It's a very simple, very objective goal, something that is very difficult to criticize. You can criticize other goals in other religions as being particular to a specific view or a specific culture even. But Buddhism is very universal. Suffering is universal. And so freedom from suffering is a universal goal. It's a noble goal. So talk about this is of course an essential part of helping people understand what is Buddhism, why are we practicing, without talking about the goal, talking about freedom, there would be no potential for even appreciating the practice of Buddhism in the first place. But again, something that's very difficult to talk about in any detail, because something that you can understand intellectually, but be completely unprepared for the reality of it. And finally, number 10 is Vimutti Jnana Dasana Katha, speech about knowledge and vision of freedom. So this is the fifth of the Sara Dhamma, the Dhammas which are of intrinsic value, and so things that we should be focusing on. Even more than talking about them, we should be focusing on them. So even if we're not talking about them, they are our focus. And this final one is simply the experience of what it means to be free. Because you could even say, well, freedom from craving, freedom from clinging, what is the point? What is the value? So talk about the knowledge and vision, what it means to live a life having become free from greed, free from anger, free from delusion, having become free from suffering. What does it mean to have that knowledge and vision? This the Buddha pointed out as the fifth and final, an extra reality, an extra truth, an extra valuable, or a fifth valuable aspect of reality. Because it's the goal, it's the ultimate nature, the ultimate existence, the ultimate state. Someone who lives their life without any need, without any dependence, without being triggered by attractive experiences or repulsive experiences, without being vulnerable to the whims of other beings, or to the vicissitudes of the worldly life, to the changes in nature and the environment around them. Such a person is able to live their lives in any way they see fit, without any sort of stress or suffering, constantly and eternally in a state of peace and freedom, simply for the very simple reason that they have no greed, they have no attachment, they have no need, they're never left wanting. They have perfect contentment, perfect peace, and perfect mindfulness, simply seeing things just as they are, without any judgment. So our practice is aiming ultimately for this, that as we practice, the wisdom leads us to let go, the letting go leads us to be free, and gradually, piece by piece, bit by bit, step by step, our minds become purer and purer, and we let go more and more, and ultimately reach the inevitable conclusion of complete and perfect freedom from suffering. So, 10 very valuable things to talk about, obviously, a great description of the various aspects of the Buddha's teaching, what it means to be a Buddhist, to practice Buddhism, and very especially valuable, particularly valuable, again, because of what they are topics of conversation. So a reminder for all of us, when we do engage in conversation, that we should be asking ourselves whether the conversation falls into any one of these 10 headings, and if it doesn't, to understand that it's probably at the very least useless, but most likely is unbeneficial, causing distraction at the very least, or potentially growth of defilements, as it allows us to cultivate increasing greed, anger, delusion, arrogance, conceit, and all of the negative qualities that lead to stress and suffering for us and for those who are engaged with us as well. So, a valuable Dhamma, an important piece in the puzzle of what it means to practice the Buddha's teaching. So, that's the Dhamma for today.